Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Just barely getting after it there. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, and we got to get right to it. It's September 11th, 2016. And while we remember the victims of the terrorist attacks of 2001, I also want you people to remember September 11th, 2016. Which will be John Hinckley Jr.'s first full day of freedom after shooting the President of the United States. That's all. Just want you to keep that in mind with all of the other remembrances of our great nation. Who could have thought on September 12th, 2001, that the country could be so morally bankrupt so quickly after such a terrifying attack? Brought everyone together and got everyone thinking about dying and eternity and God and good and evil and all of that. And you're just not going to believe what's going on. In light of that, you are not going to believe what's going on. I saw a report on the local news last week about a new Boy Scout fundraising program. It's called Flocking. And Boy Scouts go in the night to residential homes and plant pink flamingos in the yard. Then they go knock on the door and ask for money to remove the flamingos. This is the Boy Scouts of America. And they call it flocking, and everybody chuckles about it. I found it disturbing, distasteful, offensive even, to my sensibilities. So there's the Boy Scouts. 15 years later, the Denver police, according to a report we watched, I, myself, and my extremely attractive audio engineer. Denver police, I was saying, Denver police are now suspending people from the Cherry Creek bike trail in downtown Denver if they're caught shooting up in public. I said the police are issuing suspensions. It's a ticket that bans you from the Cherry Creek bike trail and the whole park area there if you're caught shooting up in public. The thing about shooting up in public is that if there's ever a time that being arrested might actually save someone's life, it's when they're caught shooting up in public. That could possibly get their attention. But instead, the police will be issuing suspensions. You're not allowed to shoot up here. Please move along and shoot up elsewhere. Apparently, that is the latest strategy in the drug control policy of the Denver Police Department. I feel sorry for the Denver police. Can you imagine having to work and do your job in such an insane environment? Well, we'd like you to issue suspensions. Move them out of the park. It's getting embarrassing seeing all those people shooting up in the park. Move right along. What kind of lesson does that teach? Well, it doesn't teach the guy shooting up anything, except that he can continue shooting up and he'll probably kill himself. Now, speaking of lessons, I found the opportunity to teach a lesson to the young children at Denver Bible Church this morning. As I was teaching the children's church, all the children come out into the fellowship hall and we read and we study the Bible. And we did all that. A reading in Psalm 119, as a matter of fact, and I have the children read and we discuss, and a great time is had by all. Finished a few minutes early because the pastor went long, as he is so often wont to do. And it's usually worth it. Anyway, the kids, we finished a little early. I let them go outside. They went out back. It's a beautiful day, sunny, warm. And the children wanted to play some sort of game where it would be required that there be two teams. And the children were debating how they were going to organize their teams. Who wants to be on this team? Who wants to be on that team? I said, kids, I said, what if we have two captains of the teams and the captains will pick the teams? And the kids all said, yay, that sounds great. So I said, okay, who wants to be captain of the team? And out of 12 or 15 kids, they all raised their hands except two kids. And so I made those two kids the captain. And I said, children, there's a lesson here. This is a lesson in political leadership. You should never give power to those who actively seek it and express a desire for it. Power is better thrust upon those who do not want it, and if given the opportunity, would rather not even have it. Those are typically the leaders that we want. And those were the leaders that the children at Denver Bible Church got this morning. And they also got a lesson in democracy, leadership, politics, all that stuff. Yes, politics, politics. What's the latest in politics? Hillary Clinton coughing, hacking, and wheezing. I heard tape of a Hillary Clinton at a rally, and it sounded like she was going to keel over and choke and die right there on the stage. I find it hard to believe that this woman continues to run for the president. It's obvious she could go at any moment. And there are rumors, because she doesn't release her health records. People want her to release her health records. Some people suspect that she's has a heart problem. She's on heart medication. Could it be the heart medication making her cough and gag and wheeze and hack? David Axelrod even came out this week, last week, recently. He said Hillary Clinton really needs to find a way to show people she has a heart. So you know what it means when someone comments that you have to find a way to show people that you have a heart? It leads many people to believe that you have no heart. So I don't think Clinton can have a heart disease. It's just not possible. Possibly, maybe she has some sort of disease of the middle chest region. But to call it heart disease, to me, would seem presumptuous. That's all. And is there anything in the world of politics? Well, maybe we'll get to some when we do the news. Oh, we've got people online now who are accusing Airbnb of promoting discrimination because certain people don't want to rent their house to certain people. They had some slob on there with a hippie beard. Looks like a total pothead. He said he was denied a room because some these people saw his picture and they were like, okay, well, we don't want to rent to that guy. Looks like a party animal. And, of course, the accusations are flying around the idea that certain Airbnb homeowners are discriminating against minorities, of course. And is on Airbnb, if I'm not mistaken, you're renting out your private property. Don't people have the right to do with their private property as they see fit? If they don't want to rent to some scraggly bearded 20-something who looks like he's going to stink the place up, they don't have to. And if they don't want to rent to a white guy or a black guy or a yellow girl or a brown man, why should they have to? Am I not free to do with my things as I choose? Well, apparently not. I thought the whole idea behind Airbnb was it was your private property. We don't have the right to discriminate. All right. Well, here we are. I guess I'll move on to the news. Is there anything? Alas, the bird whisperer this past week came upon yet another sparrow in distress. And the sparrow was obviously starving to death and injured and sick to some degree. And the bird whisperer nurtured that sparrow along for, what, 3-4 days now? And unfortunately, the sparrow passed sometime this morning. It was sad. And the bird whisperer had to be consoled because she was in tears, of course. But we reminded her that that sparrow saw 4 extra days of life because of her loving kindness and her care for the sparrow. And so there was no ceremony or anything like that, but there were tears shed. Yeah. We're going to have a wake, a candlelight vigil. Yeah, release some balloons. But we told the bird whisperer, don't give up, because there's all kinds of birds out there, sparrows and others, who will find themselves in distress. And the one thing we know is that they can count on the bird whisperer. And on that note, let us move into the news of the day, perhaps. Yes, all right. We'll start with reason number 1073 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. This particular government school is university level, Clemson University. RedAlertPolitics.com reports that a man has been stopped by Clemson University. An administrator there stopped a man from praying on campus, telling the man, this is not a designated free speech area. That was the quote from the Clemson University administrator to the young man who had the audacity to pray at a government school, publicly funded school. The assistant director for client services also called the praying a solicitation. A solicitation. Well, that's somewhat true, right? A prayer can be a solicitation of the living God. But I doubt the assistant director for client services at Clemson University had that in mind. He did tell the people who were praying that they could fill out paperwork and possibly continue if their prayers were approved by the university. Kyra Palange of Young Americans for Freedom asked the administrator, hey, is not the entire campus a free speech area? Is it not? And the administrator said, you are correct, it is not. We have designated free speech areas. To which she said, attention Clemson, the entire United States of America is a free speech zone. And everybody clapped and cheered until we looked around and realized that she's not really correct anymore, because it is no longer a free speech zone. Not so much anymore. So reason number 1073, to get or keep your kids out of any publicly funded educational institution. And from there, we'll go right out to West Point in the beautiful upstate New York. West Point there, the military academy, has officials at the West Point Military Academy have removed a video showing a team prayer. Was this a football team? Was this, I don't know. Let's assume it was a football team. Anyway, the team was caught on video praying. Some of the students posted said video to social media, but several outside groups complained. So West Point had the videos pulled down, and an investigation has been launched. Yes, the complainers, the whiners, the agitators complain that the video proved that the coach forces Christianity on the team in contravention of separation of church and state. An investigation is underway. You can't pray there if you... The agitators say you can't pray, particularly when you're the head coach at a public school. So that in and of itself is reason number 1072, in no particular order, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Get them out, run, flee, head for the hills. So the group has agitated. They have removed the video, but they say they are not yet ready to file a federal lawsuit, implying that they are prepared to file a federal lawsuit over a football coach praying with his team. Yes, indeed. Does everybody remember September 12th, 2001? Did you think it could come to this so soon? And that's the army persecuting Christians and surrendering to the Indians. Listen to this. Breitbart reports that the army has surrendered to the Indians in North Dakota. It's a headline from 1873. Well, what happened was the Indians there have been protesting a proposed pipeline that's going to carry oil from the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota down to a pipeline in Illinois, supplying vast quantities of oil to you and me and everyone else. Well, the Indians are upset because nobody consulted them, and there have been some protests. There's been some violence. Well, last week, a federal judge denied a request by the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe for an injunction against the Army Corps of Engineers to stop construction of the pipeline. Now, did you get that? The judge denied the request by the Indians for an injunction, meaning that the Army Corps of Engineers was free to begin constructing the pipeline. However, the Barry Ho administration intervened, and the Army has voluntarily blocked construction. They have surrendered to the Indians at the behest of Barack Obama and over the protestations of a federal judge. What? The president can overrule a judge's opinion? No way. Are you serious, Doug? I thought a judge's opinion was the law of the land. That's what all of our conservative religious leaders tell us about the opinion that it's legal to kill innocent children. What? The president can overrule a judge? Shazam! I had no idea. Yeah, the president can overrule a judge, and he just did. And Barry Ho, he's always willing to overrule a judge to surrender and when it meets his political ambitions, and we on the right could learn a lesson from him. And this is all getting somewhat depressing. Is there anything I got that's good? Please, reaching deep, try to find one good story. Here it is. Here it is. The New York Mets have signed Tim Tebow to a minor league contract, and he will be heading to the Instructional League. That's right. It is possible. Anything is possible in Christ. We could catch Tim Tebow at Coors Field. And I would say he'll be in the major leagues within 3 years by the time he's 30. And of course, baseball is a much more civilized and sophisticated game. More fitting of a young man of such upstanding character as Mr. Tim Tebow, we wish him luck. And he could play baseball till he's 45 years old if he can hit the ball. So, that could be fun. Should be fun. It will be fun to watch. You're still not going to watch baseball? Well, I'll force you. I'll force you to watch baseball with me. You know what will be funny, though, is when the if the instructional league there for the Mets, if they have any kind of TV contract, I'd like to put the ratings of Tim Tebow's game up against, like, the average Mets game this year. We'll see how that works out. All right. Now, let's move on. That's all the fun we have. Everything else is ridiculous, not sublime, and fairly maddening. But let's start with something that's just silly from the science. Really? File. Last month, the European Southern Observatory says it spotted an alien world orbiting. Well, they might as well have said absorbing, but they said orbiting. They've spotted a planet orbiting Proxima Centauri, our closest stellar neighbor. As reported by the Sun over in London, the planet is believed to be Earth-like, and it orbits at a distance to Proxima Centauri that could allow it to have liquid water on the surface. And the reporters at the Sun Report point out that liquid water on the surface is, quote, an important requirement for the emergence of life. Yes, as if life just emerges, and that's well established. All we're looking for now is water. We know that life can just emerge, so if we could just find water. Yes, yes, yes. Now, as we've been reporting regularly, there have been 216 Earth-like planets located within the Goldilocks zone. That's the region around a star in which the surface temperature of an orbiting planet might support water. The Goldilocks zone. Yes, we've been talking about that, right, if you've paid attention. The Goldilocks zone in our solar system encompasses a zone that includes Earth and Mars. Just so you know what the Goldilocks zone is all about. Anyway, how seriously should we take this possibility of another Earth-like planet could we flee to if all of the frackers destroy Earth? Well, I don't know how seriously you want to take this, folks, because astronomers from the same observatory had previously claimed to have found the then closest exoplanet to Earth back in 2012, although subsequent analysis cast doubt on the existence of that planet. Now, they didn't cast doubt on whether or not it was in the Goldilocks zone. Further research cast doubt on whether the planet even existed or even exists. So, forget the Goldilocks zone. Find me a planet that I can sink my teeth into, for crying out loud. The Goldilocks zone. And now we've got more. More from the Science... Really? File. The French press agency reports that a strong signal detected by a radio telescope in Russia... It could be a sign of extraterrestrial life, and it has stirred interest amongst the scientific community and teenagers who live in their mom's basement and play Pokemon and watch anime. They're all very interested, along with ancient astronaut theorists who are all extremely interested. This radio signal came from a star about 95 light years from Earth. Experts say, well, they remind us that it's far too early to know what the signal means or precisely where it came from, but it is not too early, apparently, from the French press agency. It's not too early for them to continue the narrative that we are not alone. And it's just a matter of time before we find our friends out there in space. And you know what's amazing about this? Is they hear a radio signal that they can't even decipher, they're not even sure where it comes from, and they're willing to discuss the possibility of intelligent life, yet they can look at the ultrasound of a baby in the womb and tell me that that's not a person. Or that that what they're seeing there doesn't have the right to live. I mean, there's life right there on the ultrasound. How about life there? No distant signals. This is... Ultrasound's very well understood, but it's odd how people prioritize their fascinations. Now, speaking of that, let's go to the personhood file where Amelia Grabarczyk, who was born at 25 weeks old and is documented, as far as we know, as the smallest baby ever to survive such an early delivery, delivered at 25 weeks. At the time of her birth, the baby weighed 8 ounces. 8 ounces. Well, Amelia Grabarczyk is now 9 months old. She weighs 7 pounds, 2 ounces, and there are no signs of any disability. A perfectly healthy little baby delivered at 25 weeks in an emergency situation. The baby was going to die. The baby was delivered and 9 months old now, 7 pounds, healthy, happy. Parents are happy. Go ahead and grab your Yellow Pages or jump on yellowpages.com, folks, and look up your local Planned Parenthood, because most of them that perform abortions, at least the one in our town, they advertise abortion to 26 weeks. Emilia Grabarczyk was delivered at 25 weeks and is now healthy and happy and normal. That's from the Personhood file. I've got an interesting take on personhood from National Review, which it's really interesting and refreshing to see media persons, media personalities from outside my circle of immediate friends and associates acknowledging the personhood of every human being, no matter how small, no matter how defenseless, and no matter what state of dependency they may live in. The author at National Review writes that leftists love to think of themselves as devoted to science. The science-based leftists mock Christian creationists, even as they shun vaccines for their kids and advocate against perfectly safe, genetically modified food. Leftists kept fluoride out of the water in Ithaca, New York, where this author hails from, forcing the parents to have to administer it to their children by hand. What? They gave fluoride to their children? Now Barack Obama can control their mind. That's terrifying. So they say they're devoted to science, but nothing, according to the author, nothing illustrates the left's selective application of science better than the abortion debate. He goes on to quote a gynecology professor at UC San Francisco. She talks about medication abortion, which is the new abortion pills. She talks about how safe they are. Less than a third of 1% of cases of medication abortion result in a serious adverse event, according to the gynecology professor at UCSF. The author at National Review says, in parentheses, regarding the less than a third of 1% resulting in a serious adverse event, he says, medically aborted babies were unavailable to comment on these statistics because they are the adverse event. But of course, they've been killed and they're not available for comment, at least not yet. They will be at some point in the not too distant future. Yeah, yes, Judgment Day is real. And we're all going to be there. And so are these kids who were murdered by their parents and others. And they will be available for comment on that day. But anyway, the author at National Review goes on, doesn't science tell us that from the moment of conception, a separate human being exists, complete with its own unique human DNA? The baby isn't a tumor. It's not a random clump of cells. It's not a squirrel. But the left can't quite handle the reality of the human fetus. So it waves a magic wand and says the child may be human, but it's not a person. And how does the fetus become a person in the mind of the pro-abortion left? Well, when the baby moves approximately 18 inches to a position outside of the mother's body, voila, suddenly that fetus is a person. Shazam! It's like magic. The baby moved outside the mother, and now we can say it's a person. But even that's up for debate. In some universities, and in the minds of some leftists, even after the baby's born, do we have to call it a person? What if we change our mind afterward? You don't think that's possible? Am I going too far? There's nobody who could think that way, right? Well, let's go to a story from the New York Daily News about a man in Colorado. I don't even want to say his name. A 29-year-old bastard father willfully crashed his car in an effort to kill his 2-year-old son. This 29-year-old piece of garbage has been charged with attempted murder. Witnesses who saw the crash, one neighbor in particular, said that after the crash, the father was spotted in the front seat hitting the child in the back seat. The child was unrestrained during the accident. The father had his seatbelt on. It appeared to the neighbor that when the father realized the child was still alive, the father started elbowing the child in the back seat of the car. The father's in jail. He's been charged with attempted murder. Police say the reason the father says he wanted to kill the young boy named Isaiah, the reason he wanted to kill Isaiah, said the police, was because he said that being a father was a big responsibility, and he did not think he was man enough to raise the child, which is obviously true, and just as obviously not an excuse to kill the child. But killing children is a fairly common everyday event in America. As a matter of fact, since this is a day of remembrance, September 11th, let us not forget that on September 11th, 2001, approximately 3,000 Americans were murdered by Islamic terrorists. And on September 11th, 2001, about 3,000 completely innocent, helpless, defenseless children were murdered by Americans, by their own parents and grandparents. How's that for a day of remembrance? We should remember. We should remember it all. And we should not be afraid to say that this is a culture of death. And even the shaking of our civilization to its foundations on September 11th has not slowed the arc of America's descent into inhumanity. The arc has grown even sharper. Harbor Creek, Pennsylvania, a 14-year-old boy was charged with fatally shooting his grandmother during an argument. He's in jail on charges including criminal homicide and first-degree murder. He shot his 60-year-old grandmother. He even acknowledged to the police that he shot her. And he told police he shot his grandmother because he didn't want to go to school. She wanted him to go to school. He didn't want to go to school. This is a conflict that's been going on in America ever since there was school. Mom, dad, grandma, they want the kid to go to school. The kid doesn't want to go to school. The difference is in this story that the young man shot and killed his grandmother because he did not want to obey her and do as he was told. And here's a young man. This is a product of the culture since 9/11. Could anyone have thought that we could have fallen so far, so fast, after remembering what we all felt on September 12th, 2001? Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. Yeah. On a day of remembrance, September 11th, 2016, John Hinckley Jr.'s first day of full freedom since shooting the President of the United States. We've got Boy Scouts out flocking. We've got the police forced to issue suspension tickets to people shooting up in the park. Kids are shooting their grandmothers because they don't want to go to school. And meanwhile, the millennials rave on. Yes. Now, if you're familiar with raves, they've been going on to some degree since the 60s, but they were officially labeled as raves back in the 1990s. And if you're not familiar with what a rave is, it's where a lot of young people get together and take psychedelic and they take psychedelic drugs, and they dance and have sex. That's what a rave is. Just if you're not familiar. They say it's all about the music, of course, which is all electronic and programmed by some guy on speed on a computer. And it's all about the music. Yeah, right. Listen to this from the LA Times. This is America 15 years after September 11th. There have been at least 25 confirmed drug-related deaths nationwide since 2006 amongst people who went to rave parties. 12 of those recorded in Southern California, as the LA Times reports. The problems have prompted criticism from medical professionals who are calling for stronger regulations. Well, if the kids want to get together and take lots of mind-altering drugs and speed, and they want to dance and have sex, it just needs to be more tightly regulated so that people don't get injured or die. We want to keep them safe. Uh-huh. Better regulations. So this is where the medical community is. The medical community is apparently, at least in Los Angeles County, is unable to say, we need to tell kids that they shouldn't take drugs and they shouldn't have sex with lots of different people because it's dangerous. You could get hurt physically, psychologically, spiritually, and you could actually die. But they can't say that because, I don't know, it's if no one can make an unequivocal statement anymore about anything. And I think that might be why Donald Trump is so popular. He's willing to make unequivocal statements about things, and it shocks people. And they actually think perhaps all is not lost. There's at least one guy who's willing to actually say something without equivocation, without qualifying it, and without apologizing to anyone. It's unfortunate that it's a man of his low character that has been the guy who turns out to stand up and say this stuff. But I understand it. I understand it. Back to the story about these. They're calling this past summer the summer of deaths at rave parties. The summer of death. Yeah, because so many kids have overdosed at the rave parties and died. In Los Angeles County, they've passed new laws to regulate raves, but the laws have not been tested because the organizers of the rave concerts have simply moved outside of the jurisdiction of Los Angeles County, where the Los Angeles sheriff just sits there at the border and watches all the lasers and the lights and smells the pot smoke and sees the kids. And he just sits there, has to sit there in his car because he can't do anything. One of his kids might be at the rave party. He's helpless. How could you be a police officer these days? I can't even comprehend how one could do that job. It's got to be extremely difficult. Anyway, so I have a friend. He's a professional associate who started going to these rave parties about a year ago. He went to one, and he liked it. And he told me about it, and he said, I went, and I really liked it. I said, well, no kidding. You went there, you took a lot of drugs, you got high for 2 days, and had sex with all these women. You liked it, huh? And he started telling me about the people that he meets, and their lifestyles, and what they do, and how they live their lives, and how they go from rave to rave, from state to state, and they just party and get high. And he told me this as if somehow he thought this was going to impress me in some way. And I said, so is this why George Washington's army froze to death in the forest? So that you and your friends could follow around drug-addicted DJs and get high and give each other venereal diseases? Well, he was somewhat nonplussed with that statement. He wasn't quite sure how to come back to that. Anyway, I advised him that going to rave parties is not a good idea. I said, you're going to end up with syphilis and you're going to end up with brain damage is what you're going to get out of that. I don't know if I've changed his mind. I don't think I have. I don't have that much influence on my professional associates. But when they do give me the opportunity to give them some advice, I am always willing to offer it. And so I did. So that's the state of the youth of America. 15 years on from September 11th, as we remember. And now let us all collectively remember Ferguson, Missouri. And what was the young man's name there in Ferguson? His name escapes me at the moment. Brown. Not Freddie Gray. That's Baltimore. Eric Brown. Michael Brown. Let's all remember. Michael Brown. Let's remember. Does anyone remember Daryl Seals? Daryl Seals was an organizer with an organization that was called, believe it or not, he led a protest group called the Hands Up United Group. Remember Hands Up, Don't Shoot? Well, Darren Seals named his group Hands Up United. Just totally a false lie, a complete fabrication. But that did not stop Darren Seals from becoming something of a celebrity down there in Ferguson, Missouri, leading the Hands Up United group. Darren Seals, unfortunately, was found dead of a gunshot wound in the charred remains of a burning vehicle last Tuesday. Shocking. Such a fine, upstanding young man. How does one end up shot to death in a burning car? Probably white police.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was reported that Darren Seals had his hands up in the burning car. No, I made that up. Unfortunately, the young man, the vehicle had been on fire, and he was found after the flames were extinguished, which is a bad time to be found. After the fires have been extinguished, that's not good. The case is being investigated, surprisingly enough, as a homicide. And then the reporters here, this is from the New York Times, And what I'm about to read shows you how insidious leftist agitation is and how it has worked its way into the body politic, almost like a virus. The New York Times reports that Darren Seals led protests after Michael Brown, an unarmed black teenager, was shot and killed by a white police officer. That's an unarmed teenager. You remember him in the cute pictures? Unarmed. I would remind the New York Times that Mr. Brown had arms at the time. Arms that he used to try to steal a cop's gun and to try to punch a cop. Do you know why they call guns arms, by the way? Anyone? It's because you can kill somebody with just your arms. Especially if you're a 220-pound teenager, and you're going to jump on a police officer who's 5'6" and weighs 150 pounds. Unarmed teenager. An unarmed black teenager. Got to get that in there that he was black. Let's not forget that. A very important part of the narrative. Hands up, United. Darren Seals, we told you earlier that we are not going to have a memorial service for the poor sparrow who passed. Well, no, nor shall we have any sort of service of remembrance for Darren Seals. So from the burning wreckage where Darren Seals met an unfortunate and untimely end, let's go out to San Bernardino from the Justice File. A report again from the LA Times. San Bernardino, California, has seen a surge in violence this year unlike it has faced in decades. 150 shootings, 47 people murdered with a gun in a city of just over 200,000 people. San Bernardino last year had 44 homicides, including the 14 people that were killed by the terrorists. This year's even worse. So who do you think is a more of an existential threat to you and your family? Is it Islamic terrorists or is it Black Lives Matter and the narrative that is causing police to shy away from enforcing the law to the fullest extent of their abilities? Which is more of an existential threat to you and me and our kids? Well, it's not the terrorists. The data at least supports the idea that you're more likely to be killed by criminals and gangsters as the police are forced into the shadows than you are to be killed by Islamic terrorists. San Bernardino has experienced the most murders since 1995, a rate of 31 murders per 100,000 residents. Chicago's rate last year was 18. Los Angeles, 7. San Bernardino, 31. And the LA Times reminds us dutifully at the end of their report that the killings have disproportionately victimized the city's black residents. Yes, prompting me to remind the LA Times that killings are not people, and killings don't victimize anyone. San Bernardino's black residents, they have been victimized primarily by San Bernardino's black residents, especially those involved in the Hands Up, Don't Shoot fraud and the Black Lives Matter movement that threaten the safety and the security and the domestic tranquility of all Americans. I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to all of you who have the heart and soul and nerve to carry on in the face of, just the utter insanity that we observe every day. If you watch the news, it can be very difficult to get one's mind around the delusion that has engulfed our formerly great nation. I mentioned Islamic terrorists just a moment ago and their existential threat. And while they may not be as much of a threat to you and I as the criminal element here in America, they certainly are a threat. But my next question is, who is more of a threat? The commanders of ISIS or the United States State Department? Let's go to a story reported by PJ Media. The new ISIS military commander, for whom the U.S. has announced a $3 million bounty, was trained by the State Department in an anti-terror program as recently as 2014 while serving in the security service of Tajikistan. So let that one sink in. Where did the new ISIS military commander get his chops as a military commander? Well, he was trained by the State Department. He replaces former ISIS commander Umar al-Shishani, who was also trained by the United States as part of the Georgian Army. I know it's laughable. It's comical, except that these guys are mad dog killers. Keep that in mind. So apparently the United States specializes now in training Islamists who end up number one, number two at ISIS. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Just bad luck is what it is. Well, let's see. These fellows, or at least this one, this the new leader, he's called Colonel Kalimov. He participated in 5 counterterrorism training courses through the Department of State's Diplomatic Security Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program. You see, it's a Department of State program. Anti-terror is what it is. And he ended up a terror leader. So they might want to work on the program. Perhaps a few of the modules need to be tweaked. A State Department official said that, quote, all appropriate vetting was undertaken in advance of his training. And then someone asked him, well, why is he the leader of ISIS now then? Well, actually, nobody asked that, because nobody asks that anymore. And nobody at the State Department will be fired or demoted. They won't lose one penny in pay or one night's sleep over the fact that the State Department trained ISIS's new military commander. And if you want to ask about it, you're probably a racist or a sexist or a homophobe, even worse. Yeah, that's what you are. You're not even allowed to ask about that. Speaking of terrorists and the insanity that has engulfed a once fine nation, we go to reason number 1064, to keep or get your kids out of any publicly funded institution of education, lower or higher, elementary or university. Get them out. CNN reports that George Washington University has hired a former Islamic extremist to work at its Center on Homeland Security. This is a terrorist who once made threats against the creators of the TV series South Park when they depicted the Prophet Muhammad in an unflattering manner. He says he's a reformed extremist now. He says, look, I never killed those guys at South Park. Could I maybe get tenure at the college there? What's the pay there? Like $1.25 a year? All right, I'll renounce my terrorists. I'm no longer a terrorist. All right. Let's see. What was this guy's name? His name was Yunus Abdullah Mohammed. Mohammed, really? That's surprising. He was a recruiter for Al-Qaeda. And the college now says he brings a unique perspective to counterterrorism work. Yeah, that's pretty unique, seeing as he's a terrorist. And it's a counterterrorism work. That is unique, in fact. It can't get more unique than that for a terrorist to be involved in anti-terrorism work. It's almost delusional, actually. Let's see. That's according to, he says he brings a unique perspective, says the director of the Program on Extremism at George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. He's now changed his name to Jesse. Jesse Morton is what he goes by now. I guess Abdullah Muhammad didn't go over so well at the anti-terrorism. He just didn't want to call attention to himself, you know. What's your name? Jesse. Jesse Morton. Yep, nice to meet you. Where are you from? Oh, well, I trained in Tajikistan. I've got some ties with the State Department. Maybe that'll help. Let's see. Officials at the school says Jesse has been in that world and he got out of that world. How do we know he got out of that world? All we know is he got into George Washington University, is what we know. Officials there say they are sure that Morton is completely reformed. I mean, he changed his name. One of the administrators at the school says, I trust him. We did our due diligence. Well, that being said, you're an idiot. And we just did a story about how the State Department said all appropriate vetting was undertaken as they trained ISIS's new military commander. You're going to let this guy into George Washington University? Other professors say that other organizations should also recruit former extremists in the hopes of preventing future massacres. Just unbelievable. All right. You know what? The only way to know that terrorist, and by the way, I don't like the word extremist. I don't like it at all. Because extremist is a generic term that if these pagan, suicidal, idiot children have their way, they'll eventually apply it to fundamentalist Christians. Anyone who says a boy shouldn't be able to marry a boy, or that someone who's a tranny is mentally deranged, they're going to call me an extremist. So I don't like the word extremist. But the only way to know a terrorist is a former terrorist is after he is discovered in the charred remains of a burning car after the flames are extinguished. Then you can be certain he is a former terrorist. But that's the only time. Well, there are other ways. But I prefer to think of terrorists in the charred remains of a burning vehicle. I like that. It gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling to think of terrorists in that particular position. I like to think of like a 78 Mercury Grand Marquis with the fake leather half, the roof, you know, and the flames, what they do to that. Have you seen that? That's where I visualize terrorists as that fake leather burns on the side of that Grand Marquis. Now, where was I going to go from there? Ah, yes, to Russia from the war file. The Russian media has revealed that a head-on crash killed a driver who was driving Vladimir Putin's official black BMW. Have you folks seen this video? I mean, it's just bizarre. This car just careens from off the frame across the highway head-on right into Vlad's BMW. It was a head-on collision. The vehicle crossed over from the opposite side of the road at a high rate of speed. Putin's favorite driver was reportedly killed. The Mercedes driver was taken to a hospital in critical condition. I haven't been able to find out anything about who was the guy driving this Mercedes and why did he drive right into Vladimir Putin's car, for crying out loud. The driver who was not killed was not named. I'm sorry, the driver who was killed was not named. But they say he drove for the government for 40 years, and he was Putin's favorite chauffeur. And suddenly somebody just whacks him. Just it was shocking. I'll link to this story. You've got to see this video if you haven't seen it. All right, now, let's move on into the how far are we going to slide into delusion here? Now, see, this could drive me insane. I may not even do the final, but listen to this. And now let's remember, ladies and gentlemen, how we felt on September 12th, or even the night of September 11th when we weren't sure if it was all over yet. Do you remember that? I remember wondering, are there going to be more attacks? What's going to happen? Are they going to blow up Washington, D.C.? Are they going to blow up Los Angeles? Are they going to blow up downtown Denver? Are there terrorists here amongst us? We were scared. Remember that? And we were thinking very clearly. We knew who the enemy was. We were afraid, and we were ready to fight, and we were ready to band together, and we were ready to call on the name of the living God. I remember the church services that Sunday. The churches were packed. Even the politicians in Washington stopped with the coke and prostitutes long enough to go to the church and pray in front of the people. But now, the Western world, which has been under attack by the Islamic maniacs for, well, most of my entire life, now the whole Western world has degenerated to a point of delusion beyond the insanity we were experiencing up till 2001. I mean, things were not going that well, culturally and morally. But it's as if it's been all put on fast forward. And complete and utter insanity is now acceptable conversation. A news outlet out of Australia reports that the youngest Australian person on record, they report on the youngest Australian on record to change their gender. This is a four-year-old child who's undergoing gender, I don't know what you call it, gender transformation. And medical officials report that in Australia, hundreds of other young children are being referred to the state's hospitals for gender dysphoria as young as 3 years old. psychologists and doctors are willing to entertain the idea that the child may need to become a tranny. This particular child, the youngest on record, is a four-year-old. He's being supported throughout the transition by the educational department and is a part of the Safe Schools program. The deputy secretary of school operations says, quote, "The Safe Schools is only one resource that can be used from a variety of resources in how we would support that family, student, and school to accommodate a child going through transition." So you know what that says to me? The school administrators have a number of tools at their, a number of tools available to them to help your child transition. Data from the Children's Hospital there in Australia stated that referrals for gender dysphoria have tripled over the past couple of years. A major hospital in Melbourne had 250 children being assisted by the gender dysphoria unit. So, now listen to this. This is what gets me. This is how far gone we are. I know this is Australia, but, you know, it's a part of Western civilization. Well, it was. The reporters from Australia say that some have argued it is appropriate for young to begin gender transitions, while others insisted 4 years old was simply too young. So nobody argued that it's just a bad idea. Nobody argued that. They're just trying, hey, is it okay if they're four? Maybe we need to set the limit at 12. How about somebody slap these people in the face and say, are you all crazy to tell young children that they have some gender dysphoria or they need to have a surgery and hormones? These people, these are the suicidal idiot children that have, well, they've apparently somehow risen to levels of authority within our culture. And they are more of an existential threat to your child and mine. Well, not mine, because my child would not be exposed to the Safe School program. No, they wouldn't be able to use any of their tools on my child because my child is homeschooled. But if you send your kids out into the government school, this is the kind of insanity they're going to be exposed to. Forget the fact that they can't teach them how to read and write very well either. That's beside the point. This is psychological and spiritual assassination of a child. And these people should be arrested. That's what should be happening. These people should be arrested. So there's certain stories I can't do anymore. It's going to drive me insane. New York, from the Associated Press, the first case of Zika spread through sex by a man with no symptoms has been reported. Doctors said the case is not reason enough to change any health advice to anybody. Let's keep in mind that Zika is mainly spread by mosquitoes. Yeah. And for anyone who might be considering getting pregnant, the Zika infection during pregnancy can lead to severe birth defects, but we can give you an abortion for that. That way we can fix that. Meanwhile, you can keep on chasing each other around like minks. Fornicate as much as you want. Don't worry. Just get some mosquito repellent. All right. Finally, reason number 1,071 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, a high school football coach and a special ed substitute teacher named Curtis has been accused of unlawful sexual activity with two teenage girls. It's just awful, horrible. The principal almost had an emotional breakdown when he had to stand up in front of a group of people and talk about the incident on Friday. The principal said, regarding a high school teacher seducing and raping teenage girls, here's what the principal said. I don't want to believe that this happened. You know, being a principal is a very personal thing, and you look at the kids as your own kids. Well, no, you don't, Mr. Principal. And I don't. You're not looking at my kids as if you're if they're your kids. I can tell you that. What are hapless parents in the school district saying? One hapless dad says, "Well, I feel really bad for the kids that this had to happen. Oh, that's just terrible." At the football game, parents and other students held up signs with the motto "Rise as One," and another hapless mom said, well, the kids are going to rise and they're going to be better over this. Yeah, the seduction and rape of a couple of teenage girls at their school, it's bound to make all the kids better. Let's rise as one. Hapless mom number two says, well, I hope the kids will all just hold their heads up. They've got the support of the community behind them. Yeah. I hate that word, community, by the way. That term has become offensive to me. I don't want to be a part of any community that tolerates this sort of behavior and insists that the kids, they're all going to be better for this. Yes. It reminds me of the We Are All Columbine. Remember that? Kids get slaughtered at school. And what are the parents and the sports teams are all, well, sis, boom, rah, 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 we are all Columbine. Well, I'm not. I've checked out of your community, thank you very much. And that's the end of the show. That's it. That's all we've got. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.